You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It started so well, but it ended in familiar fashion. Another derby defeat. We expected little else, but this was a performance that showed signs of promise, only for Manchester United to be unable to hold on and for City to finish 3-1 victors. A very warm welcome to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. I'm Harry Robinson. Jack Tate is with me, as always. In today's episode, we review and analyse Sunday's Etihad defeat, Wednesday's crucial FA Cup triumph over Nottingham Forest at City Ground. We play Guess a Player, we give you the Academy briefing, an update on United Women, and we preview next Saturday's match at home to Everton, a 12:30 p.m. kickoff on Saturday. Let's begin. Jack, ultimately, this was very disappointing in the end, and an infuriating third goal to concede, in particular after Foden's brilliance, which we have to admit for the first two goals. The ultimate kind of positive spin I can put on a yet another derby defeat where United were just outplayed by our City rivals is at least we made them work for it this time.
Yeah, I think this is one of those where I think the outcome and the fact that we obviously got that magical early goal really is going to soften the blow of what to me was not very different, I don't think, to most Manchester derbies of recent memory.
It's interesting to say that because, yeah, I think I probably have kidded myself a bit. Or I guess it's not kidding yourself because, like, what do we go to the football for? It's those magical moments. And as I was saying to you, I watched this in the pub. I was at the Old Nag's Head in Manchester because I didn't get a ticket, and with mates, and that, the celebration for Rashford's goal was just, it really was magical. It felt so out of nowhere, and especially after the kind of, which we'll come on to later, the debate around Rashford this week and the interview with the Players Tribune that he did, and then for a goal of that quality, and then you could see the limbs in the away, in the United away end split across three tiers. So maybe it's not been kind of silly. That is what we go to the football for, whether you win or lose. It's moments like that. But I think you're right. I probably have kidded myself a little bit that this is different to past performances because of that one moment of magic.
Look, football as a fan is about having fun. And moments like Rashford's goal provided more fun than we've had in a Manchester derby in 2 or 3 years. And yeah, for that a reason alone, this felt and is different to the other ones that we've seen. But I think coming now on a podcast in which we're trying to analyse this game and maybe talk about what it signals for United going forward, what it tells us about this team, despite how much fun that was, and it was a great feeling when that goal went in and it was fun to be leading, and like you said, make City work harder for this win, I don't actually think the performance level was any different really to Anfield earlier this season, even Anfield last year, to be honest. We didn't capitulate like that, but I think if you look at most of the metrics kind of measuring how much City dominated, how many shots we allowed, I don't think it's that different.
7-0 yeah, versus 3-1. Yeah. We've said before that 7-0 was freaky. Like, it was a freak.
Yeah.
A freak result.
And like I said, I'm saying this very much as someone on a podcast analysing this game as objectively as I can. As a fan, it was massively different. And ultimately, that is what's most important to all of us as fans, is our enjoyment of watching this team. But I think in terms of what it says about where this team is, I don't think it told us very much that was new, and I don't think it was that different to past big game performances, really.
Yeah, and I think that's my kind of ultimate view on all of this, is that this time a defeat to our rivals doesn't necessitate any kind of overarching big picture conclusions, because with the injuries we had away at the best team in the world, probably, we went with a clear game plan and we did okay and we couldn't see it through. So I think that's my overall view. But it's interesting. I think the comparison with Anfield this season is fair. And that time it was, we probably could have won that, but we're happy with the draw. This time it's, we probably couldn't have won this, but we maybe could have got a draw if we executed it just a little bit better. But I think the interesting with the Anfield, not this season, but last season is really interesting, because you're probably right in that the capitulation there is obviously what we really remember, but ultimately it's quite a similar game plan. And certainly for the first 45 minutes in that game, we did very well. As for right now, this isn't the game to blame Ten Hag for, is it? And to kind of have these big, is he the right man for the job? That's probably only true in isolation though, isn't it? Because, yeah, best team in the world, our best players injured away. But because the style of play has been so unconvinced, well as the performances, the style of play and the performances and results sometimes this season, and the fact that this season hasn't felt like it's built on his first year, this feels like kind of a yet another addition to that.
This game probably should have been, in a season that was going better for United, this should have been somewhat of a free hit for Ten Hag, in terms of, it's okay if the style isn't good, you're able to sit back, try and soak up the pressure, try and hit City on the counter-attack. If it works, you're a hero. If it doesn't, so be it. I think as it is, because of the pressure that he's put himself under, because of the lack of good performances and the lack of development of our style, it felt like the only way Ten Hag was going to come out of this game with any kind of credit was if we came away with a win, and anything else was going to signal it was just a continuation of what we've seen. Like you said, I think everyone is at this point fully okay with us going to a place like the Etihad and sitting back and trying to soak up the pressure and hit on the counter-attack. It's been, as unfortunate as this is, because it signals our lack of progress, it's been the United way at Man City for the best part of a decade at this point. But I think the issue is that it didn't feel like that much of a departure from our normal game plan, really. Yeah, we definitely saw less of the ball, but even in games against, say, Luton, or who else did we play recently? Fulham, it has also felt like our main route to goal is on the counter-attack. We haven't sat back as much as we obviously did against City, but it still felt like that's really our only reliable route to goal.
I think that's fair, but it did feel quite different to me. And maybe it's just because the first 25 minutes were, obviously you've got the goal and that lifts everything, but the first 25 minutes, it was a really, really good game. I imagine it was for the neutral as much as for United fans. And I think I heard over the noise of the pub Gary Neville saying there's not been a foul in the first 25 minutes. I think that's probably correct. And there was probably only one or two goal kicks. The only time the ball really went out of play was for a corner or a throw-in. It was really intense. So maybe it's clouded a little bit by that. Not that we haven't had intense games at Luton or Newport or wherever. But it did feel a little bit different to me, probably in the way that we defended. I thought we were pretty good, very good actually, given the opposition, at not just keeping City out of the box, but protecting that ring around the box that they're so lethal in, whether it's a magic Kevin De Bruyne through ball or a pinpoint or a well-worked 1-2 and then a cutback. We did limit those chances a lot. And I remember when we spoke after the home defeat to City earlier in the season, but also, we spoke after that game and we said, how many times do we see United concede these goals to City? It's every game. And for the first time, and I've only just thought of this, we didn't concede that classic cutback goal to City where our midfield doesn't track his man. The Foden goal, okay, Casemiro should do better there. But I am a little bit willing to say Foden is just a ridiculously good player. And United's former under-18s manager, Paul McGuinness, often posts fascinating insights on Twitter, particularly around how attackers can beat players. And he's kind of a lot of the point that underpins all of that and what he would have taught Marcus Rashford in the academy many years ago, but also many other players that came through, is he once made the metaphor of a matador and a bull, where you're dragging, and people, I think most people know this, but you're dragging the defender in. That can be in so many different ways. With Foden there, it's about going so close to Casemiro that you leave him on his heels. There's nothing else he can really do. Maybe if he was a better or he had been better in that moment. Maybe he could have been on his toes better, but I struggle to see how. And then he does the magic and manages to get past him and the little pass and through. So I'm hesitant to criticise him too much for that one. But my major point is I think it did fail to some of the more recent games because they were pure chaos, whereas United's defensive structure actually was pretty admirable, and the individual defensive performances as well. And Andre Onana, I thought, and we can come on to the second goal, and maybe he should have saved that. That's probably all we need to say. Maybe his hand could have been stronger. But overall, I thought his game management and his performance was really impressive. And he was key to that impressive defending, particularly in the first half. It probably waned a little bit after halftime.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think he was excellent. And going back to the first point, I think the first 20 minutes or so, yeah, I agree. I thought we were good. You know, we did manage to limit City's ability to create those really, really high volume and high quality of chances. We were much better at stopping those runs from deep. I think it's part of the reason why you saw City have so many corners, because as much as that was, obviously, those corners are dangerous opportunities, but I think it spoke to the fact that we were doing much better at stopping them having those really deep penalty box entries. It was shuffling everything wider, which was good.
Yeah, it's a sign of both their domination, but also our ability to frustrate them, really.
Yeah, exactly. I think the second half of the first half is where it fell down for me, and I think that was our worst period of the game. I actually thought in the second half, we were better than we ended the first, despite conceding the three goals. If you actually look at, say, number of shots, the expected goals City were creating in that second half, I actually think we were much better in the second half at stopping the quantity of chances. Again, we were good in the first 20 minutes, but we were okay in the second half. It was really from sort of 20 to 45 minutes where I felt like we were at our worst in that game. And at that point, I did start to see, you know, more of City's, especially Bernardo Silva, Kevin De Bruyne, getting into good positions in the box. I thought John Stones started to have more of an influence as well, who, by the way, as I tweeted during the game, is the most confusing player to try and mark in world football at the moment, surely, with the kind of positions that he takes up. But, it's one of those things where, like I said, I think we're riding a little bit on the outcome and the fact that City didn't put away some of those chances, but you sort of take the rough with the smooth, because we've also ridden the other end of that, like at Anfield last year, where you lose 7-0, and as we said at the time, we shouldn't have capitulated the way that we did, but that wasn't a 7-0 performance. And to the same degree, this probably wasn't as good of a performance as we felt for half of that game, but again, you sort of take the rough with the smooth. You would have hoped that on a day where maybe we got the smoother end of that stick, we would have come away with at least a draw rather than still getting beat 3-1. But there were, especially that first 20 minutes, I thought we were fairly good in the way that we defended. I actually thought the way that Ten Hag set us up, given all the limitations we had with personnel, was fairly good. I actually thought the role of McTominay and Bruno Fernandes worked really well to stop some of that, the balls coming into Rodri and John Stones, putting those two midfielders higher up the pitch, and then the split sort of strikers of Rashford and Garnacho. I think it worked well for a lot of the game.
And this is ultimately it, is I don't mind the way we set up. And as always with games such as these, you can pick your narrative and run with it. And that's what journalists will do, because it's their job and they have to pick what they think the narrative is. Some people think the narrative is about 2 years ago, United went to City and was second and lost and then dropped down a little bit, but were second. And this time United went and were sixth and were dominated. Other people said, well, look, Mikel Arteta took Arsenal to the Etihad time and time again and were beaten. And in fact, in his third season in charge, they lost 5-0. They had one shot on target and 19% possession. So there are different ways of looking at it. And I think I'm fine with how United played and was actually quite impressed with how United played, but ultimately United's squad isn't good enough. I think the two concerns there is, one, you had the moment of magic from Rashford, incredible strike, but actually it wasn't really our defending that was the problem, because we allowed City to get the momentum, which saw them have so many chances before the first before half time, and Haaland should have scored the open goal. That was very funny. And then again in the second half where Foden got his two. The thing you kind of need to be perfect at in these games, and the wins under Ole showed this, is you have to be so clinical on the counter-attack. Every other chance except Rashford's goal was fluffed. We just weren't good enough on the break at all.
Yeah, by a long shot. I actually thought, and I was saying this during the game, I think that the performances of Garnacho and Rashford were maybe the two weakest of the entire team. Obviously, Rashford got the amazing goal, but I thought his general performance was not particularly good. And so to me, there are sort of two parts to that. One is, as you're saying, the not being clinical when we got the chances to break. We did get into those positions a few times. It was Rashford on most of those occasions, Garnacho on a couple of occasions, getting into some really, really good positions, either fully in behind, as Rashford was, say, when he went through in behind Kyle Walker in the first half after Ruben Diaz's slip. And then another couple of occasions where you're running at maybe one or two defenders that are left. There was another one in the second half when McTominay was going through and tried to put a first-time cross into Rashford that didn't come off.
Kyle Walker, I think we've said this before, he's just it's a cheat code.
Yeah, he is. I mean, I was seeing this with the Rashford one where he miscontrolled it. I don't think he would have made it to the edge of the box without Kyle Walker catching up to him.
No, but I also think if he knew there was a different defender behind him, I think he might have controlled it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's the great players don't even necessarily have to make an action to stop you from performing because you're so aware that they're there. It's like the other way around would be when Rashford's at his best, i.e. last season, defenders are second-guessing themselves and making mistakes without him actually doing, say, a trick or a particularly great action because you put the fear into people. And I think that's what Walker's presence in City's defence does. And particularly, Rashford is really quick and that's one of his strengths, but Walker's kind of, in terms of acceleration at least, it seems to be quicker. Garnacho isn't that quick, so it really just nullifies United's real strength, which is why the first goal was excellent, because it was a great ball.
Yeah.
McTominay made the run that allowed Rashford that space, and Bruno Fernandes was really clever to wait and then lay off, and it should be said, the perfect pass that could be struck that well, first time in Rashford's stride.
Yeah, it was really well worked. But I think what Bruno Fernandes did in the build-up to that goal, it's sort of the second part of what I see is what Garnacho and Rashford should have been doing better throughout the game, is that he was able to get that ball under control and take a little bit of time, wait for support to get up to him. And he did that brilliantly in that moment.
Yeah.
I felt that Garnacho and Rashford, being clinical when the breaks that you have where you potentially could get through on goal is one thing. And those don't happen too frequently during the passage of a game. But the part of the game, especially Garnacho, to be fair, throughout the game that I thought was really poor was just their close control. When we did manage to clear the ball, so many occasions they'd be, you know, trying to take down, in some cases, an actual pass to them. In others, it was just trying to take down a headed clearance or something like that. And yes, they'd be under pressure, but at this level, you've got to be able to control that, either draw a foul, knock it back into Bruno Fernandes, McTominay, the fullback, whoever. There were too many occasions, especially towards the end of the first half, when City really were kind of flooding us with attacks, where we managed to clear the ball. And you think, as a defender, I've been in this situation playing where you think, right, we've done the hard work, we've stopped that attack. And all you want is for one of your attackers to give you a little bit of respite, help you get up the field. Even if you only keep the ball for 10 seconds, it really, really helps you to reset, regain some structure and push up. And too often, the ball was being lost immediately. And I felt that really, really limited.
Which is what we said in the preview for this game. The reason I felt I had, and as I said to you before we start recording, once the sun came out on Sunday, I suddenly found this weird feeling of confidence that United might actually do something, which was kind of proved right for 20 minutes and then obviously proved wrong. But before, when I had my logical head rather than my sunny, illogical head on, the reason I couldn't see United get anything out of this is because we didn't have someone who could hold the ball up. And Anthony Martial, for all of his faults, has done that for United at the Etihad and at Old Trafford and at various grounds before. That's one of his qualities. Obviously, Rasmus Højlund would have been even better because that's been one of his real strengths since signing. And without either of them, you just thought, how can United survive against City? And in the end, they couldn't. Because not just we couldn't create as many chances as we needed to, as you say, or benefit from the chances, but also you just need to give your defence a respite. It's so hard playing against City. Your legs just tire. And you saw Evans and Rashford had to come off. The fact they played while injured is impressive and fair play to them, but also maybe speaks to some kind of long-term problems at United where we keep expecting players to play injured and it harms us down the line. Yeah, you could look at this game and say, look how many of your issues over the last few years are kind of embodied by it. The fact that we've had to play both derby games this season without a left back, The fact both Derby games Johnny Evans has started for us. The fact we didn't have a striker to play in this one. So you can look at this game and say, oh, there it actually illuminates these wider issues that we've had all season.
I think it was quite a good summary of all of those issues, to be honest. I'm not sure you could really get anything more accurate. Injuries limiting you, force you to play square pegs in round holes, but then also not, even within that, not kind of executing the game plan that we set out to do. I think what is maybe slightly different is that you could see a bit more of a plan from Ten Hag in this game compared to some others. I don't think it was maybe managed particularly well, but to be fair, I remember at halftime, I thought we need to get Garnacho off here. He's not offering us very much. And I looked at the bench and I was like, well, actually, I don't really know who I would bring on. And so I don't think the game was managed particularly well, but I don't really know what more or what else could have been done that differently, really.
Because I was frustrated when Rashford came off and Evans came off, because that team, it needed something else, but they were valuable. And then you come out after and Ten Hag says, well, yeah, we had to bring them off because they were injured in the first place and they've just played through it. So it's God, it's a tough job, isn't it, United manager?
Especially when you're getting injuries like this at this rate.
Yeah, it's crazy. As for Rashford's goal, it made me think of great United goals in defeats. I'm thinking Darren Fletcher in the 6-1, Patrice Evra at Bayern.
Oh, yeah.
Are there any others that come to mind? I've got a few. Rooney in the 2011 Champions League final. And it's amazing how many of them are against City. So Fletcher in the 6-1, Antony in last year's 6-3 at the Etihad. Rooney, a free kick in, I think it must have been the Moyes season when we lost 4-1. And it was 4-0 at the time. And Mark Hughes going way further back in 89 when City won 5-1, but Hughes scored an amazing acrobatic goal. But there are some others, like Di Maria against Leicester City in the 5-3.
Yeah, that was what I was just about to say. That's a great one.
Yeah, I love that goal. Because just the audacity to do that is fantastic. So if anyone listening can think of any other brilliant United goals in defeats, particularly in big defeats, whether symbolic or by scoreline, then tweet us at UTD Weekly Pod. I can't think of any more off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'm trying to wrap my brains now.
Yeah. The other thing I think is worth talking about is the away end was basically empty before full time. And I just thought, this is so, like, it confused me, because this was not a game where you kind of feel ashamed by United, was it? I came to the end of that and thought, we've given it everything there. You just have to take this one. City are a much better team than us. So I was pretty baffled to see such a speedy exit from United's travelling supporters, who, let's be honest, haven't had to travel very far. I thought it was a poor show. And I think it worries me, particularly, I've actually written a piece for United, The Next United We Stand, which will be on sale for the Everton game, about this, because I feel, I don't know about you, but I've been raised on that belief that United and its fans would never give in and would always back the team and that kind of defiant support. I remember the Liverpool defeat 3-0 in the Moyes season, and this proper like swirling rendition of 20 times went around Old Trafford while we were being dominated, and that really stuck with me. And if you look at Old Trafford in the recent defeats at home to City and Liverpool over the last few seasons, there's always been a kind of defiant, similarly defiant United calypso going around the Stretford end, and I love that stuff. I was reading about this, apparently it's some kind of self-congratulatory psychological thing, so I shouldn't be too proud of it, but that kind of some fans take a perverse pleasure in following their teams when they're a bit shit, because it makes them feel like more of a supporter. That's probably true, but I do think United's tradition has been to stay until the end, and it worries me going into this Liverpool game on the 17th of March, and we'll talk about Forest shortly. And the away end at Forest was fantastic, but if you're going to go to Forest and celebrate a brilliant victory like that, you then have to stick with your team when they need you, and that you kind of have to show your defiance in moments like that and take it, but show that United stick to the end. So and as someone who didn't get a ticket, I was more disappointed. But I think there was an interesting trend in how travelling supporters think about things, and I don't know what the reason for people, more and more people leaving early, but I think it's probably the fact that supporters have been treated like customers for so long, and so have adopted a consumer mentality where the team's lost, so there's no reason for me to stay, when it used to be you support the team until the end. So I don't know. I think there are a few other reasons which I look at in this United We Stand article. So buy it if you want to read it and you're interested. But yeah, the away end at Forest looked fantastic and it was a fantastic late moment. And we'll talk about Nottingham Forest a bit after Guess the Player Clue 1, please.
Before Jack. I get onto the clue, I also just wanted to add on the sort of defiance in the face of defeat thing. I remember when I was, I could not tell you the game, the year or anything, but I remember as a quite a young child watching United lose a game and hearing "We'll Never Die" ring around Old Trafford and there like asking my dad, like, you know, what does this, like, what song is that? You know, what are they singing? Why are we singing when we're losing? And I've always associated that song specifically with that sort of defiant mood of like, we could be losing 5-0, but it doesn't matter. We're still going to be here singing our songs, enjoying ourselves, being proud of being Man United. And it's just something that's really stuck with me ever since. And yeah, I've never seen a United away end empty like that, especially in a game that was fairly close until, you know, basically the 90th minute. And I get that the manner of Haaland's goal and it sealing it was really disappointing. Yeah,
I'm sure a lot of people left just when that went in, it was just kind of
and you know, to be fair, I'm sure most of us watching were sort of also like, well, fuck this, I'm not going to watch this 9 minutes of stoppage time. It's just sort of pain. But I do think as an away fan, having watched your team,
nine minutes, you can score two in that.
But you know, I just think as an away fan, it's your biggest rival, having seen your team, all right, maybe not play amazingly, but like you said, put in a shift like this. This just didn't, it definitely didn't feel like the game to make that kind of point. And I don't think it was an intentional point, really. It just felt like a bit of laziness, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't like it at all. Anyway, guess the player clue one.
Right. Okay. First guess the player clue is, I've made over 500 senior appearances in club football and won 8 trophies, but I have only ever been capped twice by my country.
Oh, a lot to go at that. Definitely no guesses springing immediately to mind, but...
So I'll repeat that again, just the key thing. So over 500 senior appearances in club football, 8 trophies won, but only ever made 2 appearances for their country.
Okay. I'm hoping my subconscious will do some kind of magic here and spit out an answer before Guess the Player Clue 2 comes. But let's talk about Forest. The away end there was great, and it looked like, I'd have loved to be there. A late customer, a winner. We said, who's going to be Ten Hag's Mark Robbins? Well, there's your answer. It's a boy from Sao Paulo, slightly different. But United had to win this game to maintain any kind of interest in the end of the season. And they did. It wasn't great, but I think we did deserve to win. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think so. Across the course of the game, I mean, it was another performance that felt very similar to other performances that United have put in recent times, to be honest. But I did think that over the balance of the game, we did enough. And it's a big goal, not only to keep the season going. And, you know, we said that if you go through this week, having come off the back of the Fulham defeat, if you then get knocked out of the FA Cup and most likely, and as it turned out, get beaten by City, it would feel very, very difficult to feel particularly invested for the rest of the season. We obviously got that Forest win, now setting up a big quarterfinal against Liverpool. It keeps, I think, players, fans and everyone else are probably a little bit more engaged than they would have been otherwise, to be honest. And it was a great moment. Like the away end looked incredible when that goal went in.
Yeah, I was buzzing as well. I was watching at home by myself, and it's one of those moments where like 5 minutes later you check yourself and you think, geez, I'm a sad, sad man jumping around my living room like this. But it was a good moment. And the fact that we knew that Liverpool most likely, or Southampton, and in the end obviously it is Liverpool, we're coming in the next round at Old Trafford, it's just, oh, I'm excited. And I think someone said, is it like, yeah, my feeling is you have to be optimistic and excited before these things happen, because there'll be no time to be optimistic and excited after they happen if United lose. So why not just kind of enjoy the build up to it? I know not everyone will agree with it, and sometimes I'm pessimistic, but like, bring on Liverpool, let's see what we can do. I really am excited for it.
Yeah, how can you not be excited for it? Like, I don't know, it's one of those things. I get the allure of Wembley and everything like that, but in some ways I'm almost more excited to play Liverpool in a quarterfinal at Old Trafford than I would be in a semi-final at Wembley. Like, a final is obviously different, but I'd actually rather play them at home in a quarterfinal than at Wembley in a semi-final.
I think it's only the third Old Trafford's Cup game, FA Cup game against Liverpool post-war that fans have been able to go to, because obviously it was 2021. But
yeah, we had the one, didn't we? Yeah.
It's a rare thing. We have played them in Europa League. We've played them in the League Cup. But I think an FA Cup quarterfinal does feel, because it's a one-off game, whereas Europa League's two legs, and I think it will feel really special. And Sunday 3:30 or like a daytime, it will be massive. Yeah, I'm really excited for it. Anything else on the Forest game? That decision for the non-red card for the choke on Bruno Fernandes, I have to mention, because yeah. I just can't believe it.
And it felt like one of those ones where they almost like couldn't be bothered.
Yeah,
you know, it was like, well, it's the end of the game. Like the team that's the like who was sort of the victim, so to speak, of that foul, the grabbing of the neck or winning, like doesn't matter. We'll just finish the game. Yeah, whatever.
And you then see the furore that Nottingham Forest have launched of yeah. the decision in their game against Liverpool. Fair enough. All the referees even on TV seem to agree it was a really poor decision, and it was. But like, come on, lads. The fact that got so little attention was really poor. I don't yet have a clue for guess the player after clue one. So can you deliver clue two before we go into Patreon Q&A? And then after that, we'll have the Academy briefing, an update on United Women, guess the player clue three, and we'll preview the match against Everton in the Premier League on Saturday. But before all of that, guess the player clue two, please.
I can indeed. So 2 years before joining United, I played against and beat a United team that included Johnny Evans and Paul Pogba in the Europa League. So 2 years before I joined United, I played against them and beat them in the Europa League against the team that included Johnny Evans and Paul Pogba.
The team that they were playing against included Pogba and Evans. Is that correct?
So like the United team on that day included Johnny Evans and Pogba, and this player played against
them. Okay. Wow.
So it was a Europa League game 2 years before he joined.
Wow. Okay. That's going to need some... Oh, I think I have it.
I was just going to say, you'll definitely be able to work it out if you give it some time.
I think I have it. I'm going to mull it over during the Patreon Q&A, and we'll head into that now. It'll be an ad break for normal subscribers.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Coming out of the Patreon Q&A and the ad break for normal subscribers, and it's time for, we've had a really interesting discussion on the new UEFA format, so UEFA Champions League, Europa League and Conference League, and a bit about how Ten Hag might set his United teams up given the lessons learned from the Manchester City game going forward as well. But now it's time for the Academy briefing. Manchester United's under-18s will face Manchester City in the under-18 Premier League Cup final after defeating Crystal Palace 5-0 at Carrington on Saturday morning. A second half, Ethan Wheatley double was complemented by Finlay McAllister's opener, Harry Amassi's deflected effort from left-back and Gabriel Biancheri bundling in from close range for United's fourth before Wheatley added the fifth, his second. Adam Lawrence's Young Reds managed 4-1 and 5-1 victories over Reading and Southampton respectively in the group stages but were beaten 1-0 by Wolves. They then triumphed 4-2 over Arsenal after extra time in a really hard-fought, entertaining quarter-final that showed real quality, as this performance in the semi-final, 5 goals against a talented Crystal Palace side, is really impressive. Manchester City defeated Leicester City after extra time in the other semi-final. We don't know the date, time or location of that fixture yet, the final between the two Manchester clubs, but there's a chance it could be at one of the teams
senior grounds when Aston Villa reached the final last season. They held theirs at Villa Park, which would be really, really exciting and maybe reminiscent of that FA Youth Cup final, even though it's not as big a competition a couple of years ago. London-born, Bolton-raised 18-year-old fullback Habib Ogunyayi earned the first spot in a senior matchday squad when United played Nottingham Forest in midweek. He was in the squad again at Manchester City. Yeah, an 18-year-old right-back, former England under-17 international. He's rapid. He sprinted as a kid with Bolton Arias. He was a 100 metres runner. He's at his best when he's storming forward and offering low crosses into the six-yard box. I did a search in my notes after he was included in the squad for the first time and found something I wrote for the Republic of Mancunia charity season preview back in 2022. And I'd written, at younger ages, look out for 16-year-old right-back Habib Ogunyayi, who played at the under-16, under-18 and under-19 levels last season. He's got explosive acceleration and low cross combination and can contribute goals. And that certainly is true. He made his under-18s debut age 15 nearly three, on the same day that Bruno Fernandes scored a hat-trick in United's 5-1 win over Leeds at Old Trafford back in August 2021. He only made his under-21 season, this under-21's debut this season in the opening game. He's only played six times at that level, so it's early for him to be involved in a first-team setup. He is very much a right-back. He has played a left-back, but I think only once. And yeah, he played in the FA Youth Cup for the first time this season, and United were knocked out by Swindon in round four, disappointingly. But while the defeat was unexpected and the overall performance was poor, his intensity stood out with some really good runs and really good proactive defending and interception. So he is a talented player, really nice kid. I spoke to him a few weeks ago, and the next graduate who comes on for United will be the 250th Academy graduate. And yeah, it could be Habib, given the injuries and his recent involvement, and that would be a fantastic moment for him and a real buzz. If you want more kind of insights on players who are involved with the first team potentially or who have a bright future, I do a more detailed academy briefing sometimes in my weekly newsletter, which has been going since the start of the season. I also do stuff on United history, United trivia, all sorts in there. You can sign up at harryrobinson.substack.com if you're interested in that. Manchester United's under-21s were beaten 4-2 by Derby County in Premier League 2 on Friday at Lee Sports Village. United's goals came from Zach Bowman and Ethan Williams, but there was seven first half minutes and United conceded three goals in that, with Tony Weston, Cruz Allen and Adebayo Fapatu all finding the net in those 7 minutes. But yeah, a good win for Derby at Lee Sports Village. And United had chosen to prioritise the under-18s game the next morning, and with so many players out on loan and a couple of injuries, the 21s team was probably less strong than it could have been. The 21s go to Middlesbrough for a Friday evening Premier League 2 game this week at Heritage Park in Bishop Auckland. If you fancy attending that, the match will be shown live on METV. And the under-18s visit Manchester City in the under-18 Premier League in a Saturday 11:30 a.m. kickoff. That game won't be on METV because of the first team's match against Everton, which begins an hour later, but there will be highlights at some point on Saturday, you would imagine. Okay, Jack, I think I have a guess for guess a player, having heard two clues. Could you remind everyone of those first two clues first? Then I will send you my guess, and then we'll have clue three.
Of course. So clue number one was, I have made over 500 senior appearances in club football and won 8 trophies, but I've only ever been capped twice by my country. And then the second clue is, I played against and beat a United team that included Johnny Evans and Paul Pogba 2 years before I joined United in the Europa League.
I've sent you my guess. Could you give clue three?
My one-man press helped United to both League Cup and Europa League glory while I was at the club.
Very good. Manchester United Weekly Podcast classic line. Yeah, very nice. I feel more confident in it now than I did before. Quick update on United women. A 1-1 draw at West Ham leaves Mark Skinner's side with very, very little chance of catching the top three of the Women's Super League. The Reds are now 9 points behind third place Arsenal, and there are only 7 games remaining. Rachel Williams put United in front very early on, and she could have won it in the dying moments after West Ham's 85th minute equaliser, but Williams squandered the late chance. Her goal that she did score was 50th in the Women's Super League, but not looking like United season will end in a successful manner for United women, and I think there'll be plenty of change there in the summer. Back to the men's team, you know, Jack, Everton on Saturday, 12:30 kickoff. There are suggestions, there are rumblings that Anthony Martial might be back just in time to play his favourite opposition.
I was just going to say, if there was one game every year that I'd want Martial to play, it would be against Everton. Yeah,
can we sign him to a new contract where he only gets paid for this game? every year, but we roll him out. It would be useful to have a striker. Just on like
you know what? That would actually be a great model if you're signing injured. Well, it wouldn't for the players, but from a club perspective, like a little like pay as you play kind of model. You know, you get paid like maybe a few thousand pounds per appearance.
Yeah, this is always one of the things I've had this debate with quite a lot of people, and I always say it makes absolute sense at the elite level where if you get an ACL injury, you will receive kind of world-class medical care and you will be back. And also you are earning massive amounts of money. But even at the elite level, pay as you play is flawed because it's just distinctly unfair that you, how many times you see managers come in and just send a player away for basically just personal preference.
Yeah.
Mourinho's done it all the time. But it especially happens at teams in the bottom half of the Premier League fighting relegation where managers decide you're not for me, you're not playing anymore. For them to not be paid through no fault of their own, they might have been trying as hard as they could, but just weren't the manager's cup of tea, is unfair. And then particularly when you get lower down the pyramid, and that happens more and more. But also if you get injured, you haven't got anywhere near the same kind of access to good medical care, then the whole idea falls down. Because it you think it kind of makes sense because players are, we see as overpaid, and it's not. I think what you can do is have a lower base salary. And I think this is something that the suggestion is Ineos and Jim Ratcliffe will try and introduce United as a lower base salary and many, many more performance-based bonuses, which I think is fair. But yeah, the just pay as you play. I know you weren't being serious, but I always think it's an interesting discussion. Having studied like the origins of the players' union, it always brings back that these were debates at the time and have been throughout football's history.
Yeah, it's really interesting actually to contrast it with American sports, because in the NFL, it's not completely pay as you play, obviously, but most contracts will have a guaranteed portion that is guaranteed for any eventuality, including injury. And then there are other parts of it that are either performance incentives, like for instance, if you reach the playoffs, you get a bonus, or if you have a certain amount of touchdowns as an offensive player. And then there are also other bonuses that accrue throughout the season, like if you're still on the team by a certain date. And teams do sometimes get rid of players. They release them before they reach that date to save money, because in the NFL, there's a cap on how much you can pay players across the season. It's a really interesting thing, and it's like the kind of details.
How are they allowed to release?
You just cut them from the... So you have a... In the NFL, you're only allowed 53 players on your team at any one time. You don't have to like buy someone.
But what happens? Do you have to pay them off?
I don't believe so, no. I think you pay them whatever money was guaranteed in the contract for that season. But then there are certain payments that are like guaranteed on a date. So like June 1st is a big one. So if you release them before then, you don't have to pay them that amount.
I don't think you could... Yeah, I don't think you could introduce that now in English football. But yeah, interesting.
No. And all of this is the union in the NFL is much stronger than it is in the Premier League. And so all of this is kind of signed off by the union in big like collective bargaining agreements they make with the NFL. It's very interesting to me how much more insight I think you have into player contracts in other sports. Whereas in football, really all we get is the length of the contract and a rough number of the amount of the week.
Major League Soccer publish every contract, don't they, to the dollar. Like you know exactly how much Lionel Messi's earning. Obviously then there's the additions to his share of Apple TV subscriptions and all sorts that we can't know, but his actual wage is published. Yeah, it is interesting.
And a big part of that is because they have salary caps. So it's part of almost like accounting and reporting that you have to sort of know all of that. But it's just the way that it's made public, even when players sign, it's not like you get these big like financial documents and then it's sort of pulled out of there.
Yeah, English football that is, could do with much better transparency in terms of that, and it would probably help stop situations like we have now with Forest, Everton and City where there just isn't any of that transparency at all. And on this, going back to the subject of Everton, what do you think of this game?
Everton are a bit of an odd side at the minute. I actually watched them and I think in general they're playing okay. I think most of their underlying stats will tell you the same, but yet they seem unable to put the ball in the net. I mean, the game at Goodison earlier this season was also quite a strange one that I don't think we played all that well that day. If I remember rightly, I think did Everton hit the bar quite early on, I think? And then we ended up winning 3-0, one of our most comfortable victories of the season, yet the performance didn't really speak to those heights. But I always feel quietly confident going into games against Everton. I think we have a generally quite a good record against them. I think it'll be tough. Like, we know what Sean Dyche does with his teams. We know how they're going to set up. Whether it's Beto or Calvert-Lewin up front, there's going to be a big target up top that they'll try and use as a kind of hold up play, get players running in behind.
Could do with Maguire back for that.
Yeah, definitely could do with Maguire back. I do think the one thing against Everton is they don't have too many explosive players going forward. And so I would hope, especially at home, that we won't get caught on the break quite as much as we have done in recent times. You know, a front three of Dwight McNeil, Calvert-Lewin or Beto, and then maybe Jack Harrison on the right. Jack Harrison's probably the only one who would worry you from that point of view. But even he is not the most rapid. So I think, you know, what has been our Achilles heel recently that was really exposed against Fulham, I don't think Everton are the team that will expose it quite as much.
Interesting. Yeah. I remember it would have been September or very start of October in 2021. And I remember there were two games where you thought, that's probably it for Ole now, or at least this is the beginning of the end. And it was Aston Villa and Everton at home. And United Ten Hag passed the Villa game eventually with flying colours for a glorious comeback. But that was kind of felt a bit like Ole's comebacks against Atalanta and Villarreal in the Champions League near the end as well. He then passed with United 1 at Villa Park, which is fantastic. Did well at Goodison. So let's see how it's probably a silly market to make. Everton a very different team now, but yeah. It'll be interesting to see what kind of United turn up here. Can we play at least with the same intensity that we had against City, if not the same style? That would be good. And hopefully it'll be similar to the game against West Ham, which, yeah, it had a lot of downfalls to it, but in the end, it was eventually comfortable with a 3-0 win. We need to wrap up. Guess the player reveal. I am going to read you I'll give you my guess if you give us the final clue just one more time.
Yeah, so the final clue was, my one-man press helped carry United to both League Cup and Europa League victory in the 2016-17 season.
And my answer, and I'm pretty sure the correct answer, is under one-man press Herrera.
It's absolutely correct.
And I've just found the Europa League game you're talking about when Athletic beat us 2-1, Fernando Llorente and Oscar De Marco scoring the goals for Athletic, managed by Marcelo Bielsa. Rooney scored United's goal. Interesting to read the team out from that day. De Gea, Raphael, Johnny Evans, Rio Ferdinand, Patrice Evra, Tom Cleverley, Jisung Park, Michael Carrick, Ryan Giggs, Ashley Young and Wayne Rooney, with Smalling, Pogba and Welbeck coming off the bench. And the referee was Kunet Kekir, who later made himself infamous by sending off Nani in the match against Real Madrid.
I have such a vivid memory of that game. Once I decided Herrera was going to be the player, I knew I had to include something about that game, but I didn't realise that Pogba came off the bench.
No, neither. No, I had no
until
idea.
Until I went back and looked at it.
No.
Also funny to think that Johnny Evans was playing in that game, left for a decade, and now is playing in Manchester Derby again.
Yeah, and De Gea could still be playing. It's only a kind of personal choice. Yeah.
And we're about to play Ashley Young on Saturday.
And Wayne Rooney's going to be the pundit for TNT Sports. And Paul Pogba's been banned for 4 years for doping.
Yeah.
They're all in the news. Michael Carrick's at Middlesbrough. I'm sure Rio Ferdinand's been mouthing off this week about something. Patrice. I tell you, if you like watching Patrice Evra, I watched a good thing the other day, which was, what's it called? I think 12 meals in 12 out, 12 dishes in 12 hours, something like that. And Big Zoo hosts it on, is it Channel 4 or ITV? This is a bad recommendation. I'm not giving enough details, but basically it's Patrice Evra going around London and eating 12 dishes with Big Zoo. And they're both big characters. Patrice in terms of mentality, Big Zoo, as you can guess from the name, in terms of size as well as personality. And yeah, it's good fun. Anyway, Ander Herrera, I remember when we went to Real Sociedad away, so we went to San Sebastian, but we flew to and from Bilbao. And when we flew there, we went straight to San Sebastian, and it's an amazing city. And you really should go if you get the opportunity, because the food is just incredible and really cheap. Bilbao, we then spent a day and a half in afterwards and did the tour of Athletic's museum and took our Rocker All Over the World flag and had a few pictures by Ander Herrera's locker and left a sticker up. And I think he didn't do this with our sticker, but he then put an Instagram story or tweet or something being like, oh, thanks for leaving the sticker, guys. And it was another United fan sticker. And I thought, lovely that. I know some people resent the way that he left and after demanding more money. But I always think with these things, you don't really know what happened. And it sounded like he was just not offered a contract until too late. And he was hurt by that and then left. Obviously, he could have chosen to stay. There was eventually a contract offer on the table. But yeah, I really liked him. And I were talking about earlier when we did the, in the Patreon Q&A, talking about UEFA competitions, Herrera's bluntness and understanding of match-going fans is better than any other player in football right now. And yeah, I always appreciate that. So, yeah, that's all. For more from Jack throughout the week, you can find him on Twitter at
UTDTate, T-A-I-T.
And you can find me at HarryRobinson64 and the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod. If you've enjoyed the show, please leave us a review. If you have time, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, whatever app you use, it's much appreciated, and share it with your mates. And yeah, we'll speak to you next week. Have a good one. Goodbye. Network.